This first Sunday lecture by Imam W. Dean Muhammad was recorded live from an internet audio stream and is being brought to you by www.athreedayjourney.com. Please stop by our online blog today. And now, Imam W. Dean Muhammad.
So with that, I bring to you Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Take this!
Thank you.
Peace to you and our radio audience, and also those who are here at the Homewood, the beautiful Homewood Hotel. We always begin remembering Allah, that is remembering the creator of the heavens and the earth and all things, even those things that man claimed he created. He could not create anything unless he go to the first resource, and that is the creation of God, the resource that God provided for all of our needs. So we witness that He is God, He is one. We say Allah, His name, in the Quran, revealed to Muhammad in the Quran. Allah is His name, meaning the God, and there is no other God. That's what that means. When we say the God, it means there is no other God, only one God. And that's the God I find in the Bible. That's the God I find in other religions. All the what we call the classical religions are for the family of religion that we belong to. We say the Abrahamic are the heavenly religions. The religion of Judaism, religion of Christianity, and religion of Islam. And we really see all religions as having the same essence and essentially the same direction for human life, if we can perceive it, if we can read and get the right understanding. Many of us have something so far, so strongly fixed in our minds, we read scripture and cannot get the right understanding because we have already had our minds fixed on something that we believe so strongly that it won't allow us to perceive the direction in Scripture. And a fact of that is the presence of the Quran in the following called the Nation of Islam for 40 years, about 40 years, at least, yes, 40 years. And the leaders and the people who read it, the believers who read it, they had their own idea fixed so strongly in their mind of what God is, who God is, and everything. They could not see the true direction for their thinking that's in the Quran. So they remain really outside of the religion of Islam, as the religion of Islam was established by Muhammad the Prophet, who received the Quran, and they remain outside of the following of our Prophet, the number over 1.4 billion now in the world, and they remain outside of that following, just identifying by name, but the thinking was very, very, very far away from the thinking of that's in Islam throughout the world. In fact, the thinking resembled Trinitarianism more than it resembled the idea of God in the Quran. But that was a test for us, and it was planned to be that way. Knowing that as we became better educated, better informed, we would say, why is this great difference? And we will study it, and if we really appreciate it, what the Nation of Islam had done for us, and appreciated the sincerity of its designer, Professor Farad, that we believe was God in the flesh, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if we appreciated what he had done to really help us reform our lives and open our minds to bigger opportunities, we would appreciate, if we appreciated that, we wouldn't just give up and say, oh, this is different. Something is wrong here. This is not real Islam. No, we would want to know why. And if you study as a sincere person, appreciating what you received of good, God will be with you, and you would come to see the light. The light hidden in the teachings and language of the Nation of Islam, headed by Minister Farrakhan now and few others, but he is the most popular of all the leaders who still stay with that language in that time. You would come to see the light and really see that here is a teaching and a man, Mr. Farrakhan, Professor Farrakhan, he chose to be identified as, that is opening up code language, secret language, esoteric language, the language of secret orders. He's opening up that language, and in opening up that language, he also opens up many areas of scripture that could never be reached without help like Mr. Farrakhan or Professor Farrakhan gives in his satirical language. You can call it symbolic language, esoteric language. All of those words fit as descriptions for his work. But most of all, more important than any other description is satire, S-A-T-I-R, satire, S-A-T-Y-R, yes. Or satirical language, S-A-T-I-R-I-C-L-E, satirical language. And satire, or satirical language, what it does, it holds up ideas that really are ridiculous, that are taken to be true and respected sometimes with a sacred respect, but these ideas appear to be ridiculous to persons that haven't accepted those ideas. They only appear to be sacred and good for persons who just were born accepting those ideas, raised accepting those ideas, and never had any doubt or question in their mind that would make them question those ideas. For example, you can come up in a household in the United States of America, even now. It's dying, but it's still strong among some few people. And you can believe that there's really a Santa Claus. Now, you know there's no Santa Claus, but there was a time when you were a child, you believed there was a Santa Claus. You really believed in it. And as you became more intelligent or more informed, more educated, then you say, oh, no, that can't be. That's ridiculous. Well, I'm not going to bother disturb you here today, but there's a lot of other ideas that's ridiculous, too. And Mr. Farrakhan exposed them. He really exposed them. The teacher of my father, Professor Farrakhan. We're not going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking about our shared freedom space. Shared freedom space. Now, when I'm talking to you, to an audience, I'm really concerned for my students. I want them to be present and to have their notebook paper or pads and pen, something to write with, and I want them to take notes because I'm always giving information to my students and while at the same time speaking to a public audience or gathering. Those who use their freedom are strong enough to respect what's important in life. People avoiding their responsibility cannot be free. You may act as though you're free, you may think as though you're free, but you cannot be truly free, not in a world made by man. You cannot be truly free, or any other world, in fact, if you are avoiding your own responsibility. Freedom is a reward for hard work. In the wilds where animals are free, freedom is not protected. The survival of the fittest is the law. Although individual man is thousands of years away from the animal law, conditions can form in the freedom space of those who go about carefree, and the animal law will be their dead end street. For freedom, the wilds had to be defeated. The first to be defeated were wild animals and unprincipled people. Heavy responsibility was carried by parents. This is how the world began, rising as a civilized society. Neighbors were not able to go it alone, so the neighbors had to band together, working for the common interest. Laws were put in place. Public land was developed. Schools were open to have life assisted by practical knowledge. To make it, to live through the raw times, savage times, neighbors worked as a family of partners in the rise of civilization. Today in modern times, to know the reality of populations surviving, to have more citizenship knowledge is indispensable. We have to have citizenship knowledge. Rights not understood cannot be vouchsafed and get the protection under the law. Intelligent laws reach the publics as homegrown benefits, like almost every other public good. We forget the home. We forget how everything we have in open society of good, of any real true value, it really is homegrown. It was developed at home before it was introduced to the public. Our cooking, our diet, the way we cook our food, the things that are good for us in the market today, the way to cook, the choice of food, and we can include also clothing, the making of clothing, all started in the home. We can include also health remedies, medicine, had its beginning in the home. And if you can stretch your mind a little bit, government also had its beginning in the home. government. Because family developed naturally, that family had a sense of order, it had a sense of authority. Its authority was in the parents, and the father was seen as the number one authority. But in the home, or at home, the mother was seen as being the person in charge of that, I would say, freedom space. A sense of government, that's what family is. Family is the respect for government, a sense of government that we need. Animals respect rights of other animals. If you have had any animals or pets, I'm sure you know that. Or if you haven't had any, if you have just observed animals, birds finding food, and then other birds follow them. The other birds perhaps are bigger, stronger. They could easily drive the birds away. But we find among them a respect. Few birds are greedy, so greedy and desperate, they just take over. Most birds will come, and if the birds that arrive first refuse to permit them to eat, they will wait until the birds eat a little bit and they start to be less defensive, and then they will come in and eat. Not only birds, cats, dogs, chickens. I have observed this in animals, that they respect the rights of each other. Children insist that their rights be respected. You don't have to teach children this. They come up with a sense. It's ingrained. It's an inborn sense. They come up with a sense of their own rights. So if you take something from them that they had, and they know it wasn't for you, it's theirs, they don't like that, they will protest. They will cry. If they can, they will even fight you. So there's an inborn sense. There's an inherent sense of one's rights. And this is recognized by the framers of the Constitution, these United States. The rights of every citizen is protected by these words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, or that all men are born equal, however you want to put it, and are endowed with unalienable rights or inalienable rights. That means rights that cannot be taken from them. Among these, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness in college course, if you take a college course, in social science, political science, the class material or the professor will bring it to students' awareness that the pursuit of happiness is to be interpreted as the right to own your own property, the right to have a piece of land, the right to a piece of land, the right to have your home on that land, the right to property, if you can afford it. And we know that when the West was being opened up or developed in the early days of the development of the United States, of this country, its towns and cities, they had so much land that they would grant land to individuals. and also the poor individuals. Poor individuals. They were given, they call them homesteads. They were given a homestead. Homestead was a piece of land on which they could have a house or buildings. Sometimes the homesteads were so big they could have more than a house. And it was expected that they would farm some of that land because the government wanted produce, wanted food produced, and that would be a requirement that they use the land also for farming, called a homestead. So, at this point, I would like to bring something to our attention because we have just been pampered, made to expect that we don't have to do anything. That somebody or government, some going to take care of us and do everything for us. We're just here to just enjoy life, have fun, eat, sleep, have sex, die, just like common animals. And worse off, because most animals have a sense of social responsibility. Most animals have a sense of social responsibility. Responsibility to their children, loyalty to their mate, that they mate with to have children, and a sense of responsibility for the land or the freedom space that they use. Whether it's a bird building a nest in a tree, or animals living in the wild, they have by nature this sense of responsibility, respect and responsibility. Children be sharing sometimes the table, their freedom space at the table, and one will be taking too much off the table. You can be very little children. And the other one will say, "You better leave me some." Because they know it's shared. It's not for one of them just to take it over. No, it's shared. They can be in the bedroom. And they, one have a bunk bed in one side of the room and another have a bunk bed on the other side of the room. And one is disrespecting this freedom space of the other. He's throwing his stuff on the bed of the other one. "Get this stuff off my bed." He's speaking from his soul. He's speaking from rights that are inherent, inborn. Public space. Who owns public space in the United States of America? We do. The members of this public, the members of the United States public, America's public, we own public space. Who owns the White House that the president lives in? We do. We should understand, or at least come to know, our ownership rights. We do. When we work and pay taxes, we contributed to all of these things. The local town, its strength and survival and progress, the state we live in, everything is supported by the people who are productive, supported by their taxes. And those who are not productive, who care not to do anything, the money of the productive ones go to help those who are not productive. Charity, government assistance, whatever you want to call it. So these are realities that a conscious few of us must know in order to help others. You know, everybody doesn't have to know what I'm giving you today. We only need a conscious few. A conscious few. Then you become your brother's keeper. You become your sister's keeper. You become the ones who are the guardians in this society. Society needs volunteers. Society needs guardians. People can't be left alone. We all are not fortunate in the same degree to respect our human intelligence, to respect the inherent sense of a need to produce. That's an inherent need. That's an inherent need in a human being. It's in the soul. It registers on the mind if circumstances favor the mind developing. Sometimes you can be put in circumstances that will destroy your human intelligence, retard your human senses. The same condition that affects one individual in that way will affect another one in just the opposite way. They will defy the circumstances. They will defy the conditions that are hurting their intelligence and denying their good life from coming forth. They will defy it. And they are the ones that will be our leaders. They will be the ones that will be our leaders. So God has made life so that there's always a part of that life or some in that life that will not accept to go down, no matter how powerful the circumstances are for taking that life down. There are some that defy that and will not go down, but rise up against it, and they are the leaders. So what am I saying? I'm saying that leaders, in proportion to the numbers of the people, are like the head of the human being in proportion to the whole body. The head is not bigger than the whole body. The body weighs many times more than the head. If the body is put on a scale and the head is put on a scale, the body weighs a lot more than the head. But it's the head responding to the heart that accounts for all the great help that the body gets. And likewise for people. We don't need everybody. We just need a small percentage of the people to serve as the heart and the head for the whole people. That's the way God made it. That's the way it's been since the beginning of time. It's not going to change. So some of us imams and some of us good brothers and sisters, we waiting for everybody to come up and say, I'm ready to go to work. No, you got three or four, be happy. You got three or four out of 3,000 or 4,000, be happy. Work with that 3 or 4. God has chosen you to serve the many. He's chosen you to free the many, to liberate them, and take them to the goal line. Huh? He's chosen you. So let's get out of that old spirit that we've been in for so long, waiting on everybody to be converted. That won't work. It never did. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was one man left by W. Farad, the professor who taught him, left by him, and he was one man. He came by himself. He said that. I come alone by myself. One man. And then he left one man to be our leader, Elijah Muhammad. And that one man, he didn't have brothers and sisters saying, I want to be your partner in this. No, they said, teach us, the old apostle. Teach us. And we'll wait for him to say when the next step is going to be made. They wouldn't come up and say, well, it's time to make this step now. The holy apostle, I'll be like Muhammad, it's time for us to make this step now. No, they wait for him. And most of you all are still in that same mind. Poets became popular when I started writing. This is a fact. Business got back on your mind when I started going into business. Yeah, it's a fact. Now, that shouldn't be. Sophisticated societies have members that will come to their leader and say, well, I think it's good that we start investing in such and such things. They don't wait for their leader all the time to make a move. Those who are best qualified in certain areas, in certain professional areas, they should be alert. They should be alert. They should be watchmen for all the rest of us. And when they see an opportunity or something that's good for the whole, they should bring it to the leader. Yes, they should bring it to the leader. Because the leader is positioned to help the many and to do it quicker and faster than you, quicker and perhaps more effectively than you, because you're not having their ears. And many times their hearts, like their leader. So you want to get something done and help the many, you should come to the leader with it. Not that you have to, no, you don't have to. Because wherever you are, and I know what I hear a lot in our community, can't get to the leader. They blocked the way. Can't get to the leader. They blocked the way. You're a weak follower. The only way people can block me from getting to my leader is if I know I can help him and the many, they have to kill me. And I ain't one that wants to die. So first thing I do is call 911. I say, he's my pastor, he's my minister, he's my leader, he's my imam, and got some brutes that won't let me see him. And believe me, they'll come talk to those brutes. They'll come see him. I know because I experienced that once. Yeah? Some brutes trying to use brute force stop me from doing what I have to do. I went to the police department, and one of the detectives that spoke to me, he said, so-and-so? That's who's doing this? I said, I know him. I said, we're going to talk to him. And they did. I never got any more word from them, no more problem. So 911 works, I'm telling you, it really works. Family life in the care of devoted females is where people should qualify for citizenship. Now, I don't know if we give any thought to the meaning of citizenship. I don't think we do. Of course, we take our citizenship for granted. We're born citizens, you know. We know we were born citizens of the United States. So unless a situation has to be faced that requires us to learn more about the meaning of citizenship, we won't have it. And by the behavior that I see in most of the people born citizens in this country, I don't think they really know the meaning of citizenship. Citizenship, I quote, should, this is dictionary, Random House dictionary, citizenship should bring to mind a certain behavior expected of persons or individuals. Now this is me, but when I get to quote, I'm gonna tell you, but all of this that I'm giving you, my words, but on citizenship as the dictionary gives it. When there's a direct quote, I'll give you the direct quote. I'll let you know this is a direct quote. Civic-minded community servants who have been awarded for good citizenship, they know its meaning. Now, quote, this is a quote from the dictionary. The citizenship, the state, quote, state of being vested with the rights, privileges, and duties of a citizen. That's what citizenship means. When we behave in this society, we behave as though the citizenship is just freedom for us or rights for us, but with no obligations. So listen as I continue here. The character of an individual viewed as a member of society. Now, let's stop right there. Citizenship includes in its meaning the character of an individual viewed as a member of society. The character of an individual. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the last of our great teachers and reformers and freedom fighters, he said a day will come. He believed, he hoped for it, and he believed it. He said, in fact, he promised us, the day will come when a man will not be judged by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. By the content of his character. Now, that's not important enough for our leaders that are here in the absence of Dr. King. That's not important enough for them to register, for them to give serious thought to it, and for them to reflect the same principle and the same interest that Dr. King was carrying, to reflect it when they speak to us. Since him, how many have been telling us to measure up to the content of your character that the church wants for you, or that God created you for? How many have been telling that? Huh? I haven't heard any. If they are around and doing that, they are not public figures. The public figures, I don't hear them saying things like that. I don't hear them even showing an awareness that they appreciated the real value of Dr. King's leadership. The real value of his leadership is not seen in telling the white man off, are pressing for more opportunities for us. That's not his real value. His real value is where that power was coming from. And that power to put himself at risk, to put his life at risk, to put himself on the spot for others, that power was coming from his human values and his human principles. That's where the power was coming from. So the man without his values and without his human principles is a man without power, and a man that would never have been able to get the respect that he got from our people, from Jews, from whites, and from many, many in high places, both in the religious world and the secular world. So what am I saying? I'm saying that we lose our leaders. They don't die. We bury them. Dr. King is never dead in my life. That one thing he said is enough to keep him alive in my life. That a time will come when a man will not be judged by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. Over the many years since the passing of Dr. King, whites and their children have read his words and been affected by his words. And now they care more about his leadership than his own people. Than his own people do. Yes? And I fought our leaders. You got to fault the leaders. As I said, the head is a percentage of the body, a small percentage of the body. The head should be responsible, not the whole people. The leaders are responsible. Those are the ones we should hold responsible. Further, giving you the meaning in the dictionary of citizenship. Behavior, I'm quoting the dictionary now, behavior in terms of the duties, obligations, and functions of a citizen. Look how much is in citizenship. Behavior in terms of the duties, obligations, and functions of a citizen. So if we don't understand our rights, we cannot respect our rights. So the rights of citizenship involves more than just the right to live in this country and go free, enjoy whatever is open to the public, etc. It carries heavy meanings for you as responsible life. All life is created to be responsible life. Responsible life. Your stomach tells you you're hungry. It doesn't tell me. When you're hungry, your stomach tells you it's hungry. Now, if you die of starvation, with all the food within your reach to eat, but you died of starvation, you could be my brother, blood brother. And I would say, well, hell, I didn't know what was happening to him. It was his stomach that was letting them know some food needed to be put in it. Not my stomach. Now, if I see him losing a lot of weight or something, I say, hey, man, what's happening? You're losing a lot of weight. And he say, well, I don't have no appetite. And I'll see that he go to the doctor. I'll see he get some help. But the most important consumer of things to help life survive and prosper is not the physical stomach down there, but it's the mind up here. The mind up here. And many of us are just going on through the world. The intelligence doesn't feed and alert like the stomach does, you see. So we're going along and just passing up all the good food and opportunities for our mind to feed on, and grow better and be more productive, and we're just passing this. We can't register. We don't register appetite, mental appetite. We don't register mental hunger. We don't register intellectual hunger and the need for intellectual growth. We don't register this. We're just caught by fun life and just going through the world carefree. And living more in the animal state of life or existence than we are living in the human state of existence. Now, everything I tell you is supported by Scripture. I don't speak unless I'm supported by Scripture. You see? So, don't think that this is something coming from me or he's trying to impress us with what he knows. No, I'm not. I'm trying to impress you with what you don't know. And I hope you'll start wanting to know more. Wonderful. God is greater. So we have people, they're awarded the award for good citizenship. And when they're awarded for that, for good citizenship, it is because they're conscious citizens. Conscious citizens. So many of us are citizens, but we're not conscious citizens. We're not conscious. Anytime a citizen comes to the neighborhood with his car window down, and he throws banana peelings out on the street, or some barbecue rib bones out on the street, he's not a conscious citizen. Anytime you come in the neighborhood and there's trash and garbage all over the neighborhood, and yards are not attended, that's proof that they are not conscious citizens living in that area. Now, I'm not always ready to condemn them, no, because many of them can't help their conditions. Some of them need to see a psychiatrist. I'm serious, I'm not joking. Some of them need to see a psychiatrist. Some of them can be helped if they just see a social worker, especially one that attends the needs of families. Mm-hmm. So some of them are not responsible for their condition because their sense of what they should be doing is not present in them anymore. Bad things have had traumatic effect on them, and they're not able to function intelligent as human beings anymore. So we are brother's keeper. Those who see that are supposed to do something to help those people, to help them. When I look at neighborhoods where African-American neighbors, residents, cannot accept that their own dignity is insulted when they don't have a business showing in the freedom space that they occupy. Don't have a business showing. They go to everybody else to purchase their needs, go out of their neighborhood to purchase their needs, or go to someone who has come into their neighborhood and open businesses in their neighborhood. But they don't come home from work and pass by all these other people making money in their neighborhood and feel that their dignity is insulted. So those are people that need to be rescued from their own bad mental state. And that's what we should do. That's why the work that I give my life to is supported by so many of you good brothers and sisters in Chicago area and throughout the United States and in places beyond the United States, like Bermuda. I love to visit Bermuda because I go down the main business artery of a street in Bermuda, Main Street in Bermuda. And I see the presence of Muslims that belong to us, the presence of their businesses along that street. Oh, that's so comforting to me. So satisfying in my heart and soul and mind to see their presence there. We have to have more of that. Now I'm going back to a sense of ownership, and I'm going to conclude it with a brief discussion of a sense of ownership. It's a requirement in our soul, God put it there. If you don't believe in God, Mother Nature put it there. It's a requirement in our soul that we own something. We are born owning something. We have to grow up to be responsible for what we own, but we are born owning our own bodies. When we come from our mothers, a full, healthy person, it is expected that we will grow up and one day become responsible for our personal life, for our individual or personal life.
WOL 1450 AM Washington, D.C. WOLB 1010 AM Baltimore.